Good morning. If you would have told me a couple years ago that my life would have been, my livelihood would have been controlled and in the hands of a pen, I thought, well, that means my artwork is taken off. But instead, it's one of these EpiPens that I have to carry around. Sometimes life has harsh realities to it. And the title of my talk this morning is "That's Harsh." It's a phrase I've heard Kinnick say, "That's harsh." I've heard other people say, "That's harsh." A lot of things these days could be classified as harsh. And so many of them have gone by the wayside as people have decided that it was too harsh for those things to keep existing. Others maybe had gotten rid of that maybe we shouldn't have. One of them is dunce caps. Did anybody, I'm just out of curiosity, has anybody ever seen dunce caps in a classroom other than TV? Iowa State Fair. Well, dunce caps are obviously a thing of the past, and I've never seen them actually used. But individuals misbehaving or even slow learning would be sat in a corner with a dunce cap in a classroom and often probably got made fun of on the playground for having to wear one of these humiliating hats as a result. And as you can see on the picture, something that I do remember having to do was writing sentences. If somebody acted up in your class, then the whole class wind up having to write sentences like however many times the teacher told you you'd have to write them, whether it's 50 times, "I will not be loud in class." And as my art teacher used to have one, she just passed away last week. But she used to make us write one of the longest words in the English language, anti-disestablishmentarianism. She would make us write that over and over and over if kids acted up. Another form of punishment that kids don't get to relate to enough today is washing their mouth out with soap. If they use bad language or maybe talking back as well. I know I explained that to my son and he thought it was absolutely terrible that somebody would do this to somebody. But it's a reality. I wouldn't want to use bad language if I knew I was going to get my mouth washed up with soap. Then, so there is the advantage to that form of punishment. Paddles. Paddles in school. I did see them in school. I remember seeing them in my first grade classroom. And I remember seeing one in the principal's office that looked really similar to that. And if a child knew that they were going to have to face a paddle if they got in trouble, I would think that they would be a lot less likely to act up. But now the teachers have no say, and kids don't fear retribution and they do not act as well behaved as they used to. These methods would all be deemed as harsh by kids today. Now, I've heard of this next one, that there's this one teacher that apparently uses or has thought about using this, but I won't use this for the sake of anonymity. I'll just say his name is Hark Merman. And according to social media, it says, my school said we needed to start giving passes for students to go to the bathroom. Hopefully they don't have to go too bad. Must solve before leaving the room. And upon the return, you must reassemble, re-scramble. So it's working good. Okay. That's good to know. But some might, if they have to go really bad, might deem that cruel and unusual, but hopefully there haven't been any accidents along the way. Many of these would be cruel and unusual punishment, which is a phrase in common law describing punishment that is considered unacceptable due to the suffering, pain, and humiliation it inflicts on the person subjected to the sanction. In Genesis, the fourth chapter, verses 9 through 15, the Lord said to Cain, "Where is your brother Abel?" "I do not know," he replied. "Am I my brother's keeper?" The Lord said, "What have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are under a curse and driven from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you go to work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops for you. You will be a restless wanderer in the earth." And Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is more than I can bear. Today you are driving me from the land, and I will be hidden from your presence. I will be a restless wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me." But the Lord said to him, "Not so. Anyone who kills Cain will suffer vengeance seven times over. Then the Lord will put a mark on Cain so that no one who found him will kill him." Cain had problems with the punishment that God told him he would suffer for killing his brother. He felt it was too harsh. He thought others would seek to kill him, but God said that that's not what was going to take place. But for him, his livelihood was growing food from the ground, and he was good at it. Now he wasn't going to be good at it anymore. Something that he had been good at his whole life was being taken away from him. There's consequences, and sometimes they're going to be harsh. In our country, we are free to make our own choices. We have industry, and we can prosper on our ideas that we come up with if we're somebody that is industrious and able to make a living and have ideas that other people are interested in. Other countries aren't so lucky. Their governments force them to conform to things like communism, and they're not allowed to flourish. This past week, Kinnick's history class went over such a country in being North Korea. If you can see that outline there, that's not the ocean. That's a country, a satellite feed from space at night. What's different about it? No lights. Versus our country at night. A whole lot different. Their country controls everything. They don't want anybody to flourish. To us, that's harsh. But to them, that's reality. They have no choice. They have no freedom to prosper. Once held back to make sure nobody does prosper under harsh government, these people who live there are under that government, and they have to face reality. And that harshness is just the way they have to live. They didn't get a say in it. Just like, how harsh is this reality for them? God created us. We are His people. And as His people, we have rules that we're told about in the Bible to live by. We either follow those rules that God has set by for us, or we suffer the promises that we are told of in this book that will be our reality. I hear people question all the time, why does God make us if some of us would have to be punished eternally? God exists, and He wants to be loved just as we do. He could have made us robots. He could have done that. And we would have done everything exactly like He told us to. Robots can't love. Have you ever had a toy and you felt that it loved you? Only in Toy Story, maybe. The only way that you can create or have love is to create free will, which God did. And to be able, and for that being to be able to choose to show love or choose selfishly to do whatever it wants. My children can choose to love me for what I do for them. They can also choose to hate me and not want anything to do with me. We are warned of the punishment God has for those who don't love and serve Him. How can the creation overrule the Creator? In the end, there's going to be a price that's paid, and it's going to be the one pay. It's going to be the one that God tells us is the punishment that we're going to have to face. Society has worked hard to get rid of the harshness of a lot of punishments. In the past, there's been caning, where a cane would be used to professionally inflict wounds on somebody. If somebody would steal, they'd have their hand cut off, fingers cut off. Stoning, which is mentioned in the Bible. Crucifixion. Capital punishment. Flogging. And also jail. these days, prisons are less punishment than what they used to be, and much more sanitary. You don't have rats crawling around in your in the prison cell with the inmates. Good enough that some people commit crime just to get there, get put in prison, rather than be homeless and wind up getting meals paid for them by other people that are working. Society in general has a problem with the idea of any kind of punishment being harsh and eternal. But they still expect people to be punished. They clamor for it. They even want people to be removed from their jobs and never be able to work again unless they change their stance on things to match their own beliefs. They call it cancel culture. And people follow people around online that they're mad about and go after their employees. How can you, employers, how can you employ such a person that does, that thinks this way, to try to make sure that that person suffers and never can work because their beliefs are something that they did. Even bringing up things that they did 20 years ago and no longer hold the same views. If someone commits murder, people still want justice. Or if somebody hurts a child that's already born, they want to make sure that that person suffers for that. And radio and TV, they still have an extremely loose rein on language, but there is still one there. There's still some words that they're not allowed to say on the radio or some TV stations. Most claim that it's to keep it away from the kids hearing those things. But why? There's a built-in necessity to want purity and goodness at some level, even though it's been warped. Who put it there? God did. God wants us to have some sense in our mind to do what's right. We're not supposed to make that up in our minds, what's right. We're supposed to listen to what God tells us is right. And we have scriptures to do that. I follow along with Steve Wright doing the daily reading that Mark has set up. And in that, he earlier this week mentioned this story. And upon further study, it turns out to be just that, a story. But the point is well conveyed, so I still want to use it this morning. But keep in mind that it's not a true thing that happened. Shepherds in ancient Israel would break the leg of a sheep that would keep wandering away. And while this sheep was healing, the shepherd would nurture that helpless sheep back to health, carrying it close to his heart. And in the process of that healing, the sheep would become endeared to the shepherd to the point that it would never stray again. I like the thought of that story, and it's no wonder that it's been used by preachers in the past to talk about people who would wander away and have problems staying with the flock. It's no wonder that that would be a good story to tell for that purpose. But there, as good of a message as it is, it can be seen to be too harsh. Plus, there are a lot of other reasons and problems with this idea, as that sheep would be in danger if the shepherd had to quickly move the herd because of some kind of danger that was going on. It wouldn't be able to herd the sheep and carry that sheep around, or if there was an animal threat or something like that. And there's other things too that would bring that into question. But we know that there is a hell, and we know it is a terribly harsh place. That doesn't mean it's not going to exist if we don't want it to. It's still there. Deep down below us, underneath us, none of us like the idea of being punished. We prefer not to think about it at all. We don't want to think of any of our loved ones suffering in hell either. Christ talked about hell. And he talked about it more than he talked about heaven. In Luke 16, 22 through 31. So it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus that he might dip the tip of his finger in the water and cool my tongue. For I am in torment in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received good things and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted and you're tormented. And besides all this, between us and you, there is a great gulf fixed, so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those pass from there to us. Then he said, I beg you, therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. Abraham said to him, they have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them. And he said, no, Father Abraham, but if one goes from the dead, they'll repent. But he said to him, if they don't hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead. The rich man had family too, and he was concerned about them. He didn't want them to go to that same place that he was at. There are 162 references in the Bible to hell. Jesus mentioned it over 70 times himself. It's there. How does he describe it? Mark 9. And he answered, the one who sowed the good seed is the Son of Man, and the field is the world. And the good seed stands for the people in the of the kingdom. The weeds are the people of the evil one. And the enemy who sows them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the harvesters are angels. As the weeds are pulled up and burned in the fire, so it will be at the end of the age. Let's go to verse 44. Well, I don't have it on here. Mark 9, verse 44. After it talks about how the fire not being quenched, it says, where their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. And in verse 46, it says, where their worm dies not, and the fire is not quenched. Verse 48. Where their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. Every other verse through here talks about the people in hell having their own worms that live inside them and eat them while they're in hell. And the fire that they're in never stops. Seems harsh. It's reality. I don't want to be there. Matthew 13, 37 through 42. He answered, the one who sowed the good seed is the Son of Man, and the field is the world, and the good seed stands for the people in the kingdom. The weeds are the people of the evil one, and the enemy who sows them is the devil. The harvest is in the end of the age, and the harvesters are angels. As the weeds are pulled up and burned in the fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send out his angels, and they will weed out of his kingdom everything that causes sin and all who do evil. They will throw them into the burning furnace, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Matthew 25 and 30. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Matthew 18 and 8 says, everlasting fire. Matthew 25, verse 41, says, depart and prepare for the devil and his angels into everlasting fire. I don't want to hear that. I don't have to hear that because of Christ. Because I accept him. Do you accept him? Christ saying it once should be good enough to conclude there is harshness to come for those who decide to step away from God and his comfort. But he mentions it over 70 times in written form. We can only choose what destination we have and choose not to be headed toward that eternity, but toward one with God where there's never any sadness. Job 18, 5 through 21. The lamp of the wicked man is snuffed out. The flame of his fire stops burning. The light of his tent becomes dark. The lamp beside him goes out. The vigor of his step is weakened. His own schemes thrown him down. His feet thrust him into a net. He wanders into its mesh. A trap seizes him by the heel and a snare holds him fast. A noose is hidden for him in the ground. A trap lies in his path, terror startle him at every side and dog every step. Calamity is hungry for him. Disaster is ready for him when he falls. It eats away parts of his skin. Death, firstborn, devours his limb. He is torn from the security of his tent and marched off to the King of Terrors. Fire resides in his tent. Burning sulfur is scattered over his dwelling. His roots dry up below and the branches wither above. The memory of him perishes from the earth. He has no name in the land. He is driven from the light into the realm of darkness and is banished from the world. He has no offspring or descendants among his people, no survivor where he once lived. People of the West are appalled at his fate. Those of the East are seized with terror. Surely such is the dwelling of an evil man. Such is the place of one who does not know God. Terrible reality. Last verse this morning. Revelations 14:10 through 11. They too will drink the wine of God's fury, which has been poured full strength into the cup of his wrath. They will be tormented with burning sulfur in the presence of the holy angels and of the Lamb, and the smoke of their torment will rise forever and ever. There will be no rest day or night for those who worship the beast or its image or for anyone who receives the mark of its name. This could be our harsh reality someday. But like I said, it doesn't have to be. You can serve to serve Christ and accept him as your Savior and accept that he is the Son of God and he loves you and that hell was never intended for any of us, but for the devil and his angels. But if we listen to the devil and his angels, we're going to end up just as bad as he is. You have an opportunity to become part of Christ's body in baptism, knowing what you're doing when you're baptizing and confessing by your mouth that you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and you want to be baptized in his name and be a part of his church. You can have the good reality and weed out all that other stuff. You don't have to have a harsh eternity. If you have any other needs that the church can help with, we'd be more than happy to help you if you'd bring those needs forth in front of the church and let it be known at this time as we stand and sing the invitation song.